Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, the proud host of VFE. And we are deeply immersed in our Black Excellence series, celebrating Black Excellence during the month of February, because of course, we are celebrating Black History Month. And today's guest is just, I tell you this, his calmness, right? His calmness with leadership. I wish I had this, Dr. Jackson, because I tell you, the waves could be going up and down, and Dr. Lloyd Jackson, he is just like, no, we got this. And I always like to reference Dr. Jackson, a quote from, or from a presser from Colin Powell, where he stated that, you know, his colonel, you know, he asked, there was a question about good leadership. And the colonel has said, you know, you're a good leader when people are curious to follow you. And that, and Dr. Jackson, you bring that immense curiosity because people follow you because just your natural leadership style. And today's guest that we have during our Black Excellence series, celebrating leaders like Dr. Lloyd Jackson, I can't wait for my audience and the participants here to be able just to engage in your leadership signature, engage and unpack specific leadership strategies, but more on the lines of that collective calmness that you have within your leadership signature. And Dr. Lloyd Jackson is the proud superintendent of Texarkana, Arkansas School District in, and let me get this right, Texarkana, Arkansas, right?
You got it. Yeah, we're the twin city.
The twin city. You say that fast about 10, 15 times. But again, I'm just so happy to have him here. And I can tell you where the calmness comes from, because, you know, he is a part of the oldest and the coldest fraternity, Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. Listen, Doc, you know, I got to get that in. But
nothing like it. Nothing like it.
I got to get that in. But let's give a warm, warm, warm welcome to Dr. Lloyd Jackson, appearing on our Black Excellence Series, the fourth annual Black Excellence Series on VFE. Dr. Jackson, how are you doing today?
I'm wonderful. I appreciate that. I appreciate the introduction. And you reminded me that you never know what people see. And you point out the calmness and leadership. And it's certainly a mantra of mine. My goal, as I've shared throughout my leadership journey, has been, I'm kind of like that duck. I look real calm on top of the water, but underneath that water, my feet are just flapping and moving and shaking and trying to stay afloat and making it happen. Because there are, in education, as you very well know, there are waves, and those waves sometimes come in crashing in real high. Others, there are calm waters, but at the end of the day, leadership has to stay consistent, has to stay calm, and has to be controlled. And people do follow those folks that they, one, have curiosity around, but also that they trust. And you can't trust someone who is just, unpredictable, or who's emotional high or emotional low. At the end of the day, you know, you're going to get. So again, thank you for that. And a reminder that the work that we do is one scene, but is important.
Absolutely. Dr. Jackson, you exemplify consistency. You exemplify consistency and couple that with impact. Your leadership, I tell you, Dr. Jackson, I've been following you for a while now, and it's just been remarkable seeing your growth, seeing you in the superintendent role, and just seeing the impact that you're having. To my audience, we were at NAPSE together, and, you know, I was walking by Dr. Jackson. Dr. Jackson and I had said hi, you know, really quick, and I'm like, Doc, we got to get together. I'll call you. It was like a line waiting for him. It was a line waiting for Dr. Jackson. I'm just happy. I just walked by and he acknowledged me. But Doc, so good to have you here. But your tenure in education, Doc, has influenced many, many, many stakeholders and students. You know, most recently you were appointed as a superintendent of Texarkana, Arkansas School District, where you are not only a superintendent, but you're a proud alumnus. So for my VFE audience who do not know Dr. Lloyd Jackson, what song unpacks your leadership signature and influence within this equal sphere?
That's a wonderful question, and I love it because it makes you think. And this question makes me think. And I think the song I land on for this question and that unpacks my leadership and my signature around leadership is a change is going to come by Sam Cooke. The original change is going to come by Sam Cooke, because it really speaks to perseverance. It speaks to patience. It speaks to hope. And those are all things that we have to have in public education. And when you start talking about leadership, and the systems work that goes along with it, you're not going to have quick wins. You're not going to have all the applause, but this really is work that you have to believe deeply that change is possible, may not see it right now, and then even progress may feel slow, but change is going to come. And then you start talking about being as a superintendent, especially an alumnus and leading in my home district, you got to believe that that lead with that belief that the transformation is coming. It takes time, for sure. It takes courage. It takes trust. It takes consistency. But if we're going to do this, this song reminds me that meaningful change doesn't happen overnight. But it does happen when you're anchored in the purpose. And so Sam Cooke's A Change Is Gonna Come is that mantra for me in this leadership world.
To my VFE audience, that answer that Dr. Jackson provided to us, that is basically your introductory course to defining what leadership is. And I really love how you unpacked it, right? Change is going to come, very, very meaningful song, right? When we think about it. But I really love the themes, right? The notes that you presented, how a change is going to come. When I think of this, especially this paradigm of the AC stage of education after COVID-19, where we have to have intentional transformation to be in alignment with our new learners. I always say Generation Alpha, Generation Beta, perseverance and hope. Right? We have to have kind of like this underlay of perseverance and hope as we're going through the transformation process. But within leadership, what I love the phrase that you said there isn't quick wins, right? Change is going to come when you're anchored in the purpose, but progress is slow and it takes time. And when we think about how the model is constructed, right? When we think about curriculum, when we think about instruction, when we think about pedagogy, systems and structures, the critical nodes within the operating model, when we think about transforming that to be in alignment with what I say this 22nd century lens, 22nd century systems in alignment to Generation Alpha and Beta, we have to have consistency. We have to have the courage. We have to take time. And again, what really resonates with me, Dr. Jackson, is you have to work, your transformation work has to be anchored in purpose. Well stated, good brother. It's going to come no matter what. We have to, because our students, Generation Alpha and Generation Beta. Now, I know that this is, you're completing your first year as superintendent of Texarkana, Arkansas School District, but during your listening and learning tour, right, you frame these emergent trends into three strategic priorities, which I thought, Dr. Jackson, was, wow, really captivating, where now it's really focused, right? When we think about, I think it's Fullan's work, right, that had focus, or Smoker, one of Smoker Fullan's work around the book Focus, right? Your work, the strategic priorities within your district, is really focused to these three core areas of literacy, behavior, and chronic absenteeism, right? Now, those are being leveraged within your strategic plan, but how now? I want to really unpack your strategy or your strategic approach to this. How did you start concretizing those three strategic priorities into the cultural frames of your district? So now every single stakeholder, leadership, classroom practitioners, your executive cabinet team, your board of education, how did you create that culture around those organizational essentials?
Yeah, so we start thinking about the work that we do. I did a lot of listening, and I did that intentionally. When I first got here, I said, I'm going to do three things. I'm going to listen, I'm going to learn from what I've what I've heard, and then we're going to lean in. And so we're certainly in that lean in phase now after we listen. And there were a lot of aspirations within our system. People are excited, one, about change, but they also recognize, and certainly when you get in the middle of it, that change can be challenging. And so how do you focus that so it doesn't feel overwhelming? And so smoker's work, as you just shared, really, you got to focus it in. And when you get that focus, and the whirlwind, as you learn through Covey's four disciplines of execution, that whirlwind is always around you. But what are you trying to land? What's coming to the runway that you're trying to land? And what I kept hearing over and over again are that our students weren't consistently reading on grade level. I heard that behavior was interrupting learning, and that too many of our students were simply not present in school, and that it may for various reasons. And so if those were consistent things, how do we address them? And that's when I start leveraging 4DX, the four disciplines of execution, so that we all were using the same frame as we operationalize this plan with clear goals, some lead measures. We even have visible scoreboard across our system and at the building level, even at the district level, and then have that weekly accountability rhythm. And we're talking about these three things. And if the work is not tied to these three things, then that becomes an ancillary conversation, but the major conversations. Now, do the other things still have to happen? Yes, the whirlwinds of the work has to still go on. We're still dealing with parent engagement. We're still dealing with communications. We're still dealing with all those other pieces. But our data is focused in, and we're having clear conversations, we're having purposeful conversations and consistent conversations around literacy, attendance, and behavior, and the actions that we're taking, we're measuring those, putting those on a visible scoreboard. And we talk openly about those three priorities at every level. As you just shared, I meet every month with four different partnership groups, our students, our teachers, classified staff, as well as our parents. Well, guess what we're talking about? We're talking about both the decisions the district is making, but also what things we're doing around literacy, behavior, and our chronic absenteeism, so that becomes just a daily routine. And what I've heard from our leadership over and over again, and ironically, every Monday morning, our executive team, which includes all of our principals and department heads, sit at a table, hour and a half at most. We try to do no more than 2 hours of sitting at the table, talking through our plans for the year, having an accountability conversation, and making sure we're all collaborating and coordinating our efforts. Every first Monday of the month, we do a leadership focus. And so we have one of our leaders will share out some of their learning. We almost get a 15-minute book study every month that we get the whole book in 15 minutes where we get to expand our knowledge. And this Monday, one of our leaders brought the book Focus. And in their conversation, they shared authentically that, you know, when I brought this book back out to kind of refresh my mind around it and present this presentation on it, I thought I had to have a big old long checklist. You know what? We need to start doing this. We need to start doing this. And what I found was it was affirming some of the things that we have been doing with the last year and a half. I see that we are focused in, that we are being intentional around our work. And so that was affirmation that our focus on those three, what we call big rocks, or those three wildly important goals, are speaking to our leaders. And if it's speaking to them, then they're speaking that same language within on their campuses. And then that trickles down to our students and families. And it's been impactful and certainly a shift for us as people finally see how their daily work, everything they do every day, is connected to student outcomes and student success.
Dr. Jackson, lucid, concise, right? Because as you were stating your answers or strategies that you were providing, I was putting it more in this kind of scientific frame around operationalizing performance management. And one thing about strategic performance management is the focus around specific core priorities. And anything else that deviates outside of those core priorities would be considered exception processing, right? Work that's not focused towards the organizational objectives and goals. And the three big priorities of literacy, behavior and attendance. And what I love about this, and to my VFE audience, Dr. Jackson calls it the visual scoreboards, right? When we think about the emulation, those are the same thing as scorecards, where now we're monitoring and measuring the specific KPIs within that scorecard. And what I love about it, right, is measurement focused. But Dr. Jackson, you have your leaders, you have your teachers, you have the weekly leadership focus meetings, intentional to create organizational alignment and organizational coherence, where now the acceleration, the explicitness of the acceleration to be able to increase literacy outcomes, to be able to decrease chronic absenteeism, and to be able to improve behaviors within the classrooms. Wow, it doesn't matter what school you go to, if in the district, you're going to see that level of focus and that level of coherence in those three critical areas. Very intentional, Dr. Jackson. That's why I said that, you know, the strategy is lucid. But throughout your first year as superintendent, right, of schools, you intentionally analyze the district assessment practices. I love this, Dr. Jackson. Absolutely love this, right? Because I believe that this is a necessity in the context of having clarity on obtaining clean data to improve systems and outcomes based off of your three priorities. But Dr. Jackson, really want to unpack your IP, your intellectual property with this. First, from a lens of inquiry, Doc, how did your investigation lead to systemic organizational changes to improve instructions and system level outputs? And then second, Doc, what does effective data literacy look like in your district after your findings and recommendations were disseminated to the board and to your stakeholders within the organization?
Well, I'll tell you, in this listening conversation, I listen to students, I listen to parents, I listen to our educators, and certainly our district leadership. And what I learned was we had the drip, and not the drip in the good way, right? We were data rich and we were information poor. We had a lot of information, I mean, a lot of data, but we didn't use that data to really drive instruction. And for a district that has 3,700 students, 7 K-12 campuses and a pre-K center, we were literally a system of schools. So what one school was using as a data point, another school may or may not. And so you may have had accelerated reader over here, but not another campus. You may have seen an iReady approach at this campus, but it was not systematic across our system. And so even within our data approach, we said, how can we make this a system where it is a school system instead of a system of schools that are individual? So we had to streamline our assessments and certainly make sure that they had instructional relevance. If we're going to give it, what are we going to do with this particular data? And how is it going to impact instruction or student outcomes at the end of it? And so we had to have clear assessment purposes. You know, why are we giving this? And then we had to normalize or calibrate our vocabulary around it. What is a common formative assessment? Because it looks different depending on who you were talking to, but we all had to have the same language and then the same expectations around that, which helped our data literacy. What are we looking at? Why are we looking at it? And what is it that we hope to get from this? And then if we're given an assessment and not using the data from the assessment, then let's stop giving the assessment because there's no point in the assessment. And so when we get to this space of what does effective data literacy today in TASD, Technical Arkansas School District, look like, and what does it mean? It really means that our teachers and our leaders in large part can explain what the data says, why it matters, and what they're going to do with it next, without necessarily having to have a whole spreadsheet in front of them to do that. It is, they studied the information, they understand it, they have really assessed it in a way that they've internalized it. And then from there, they're able to talk through it and put it into practice in their classroom. And data is no longer this compliance exercise where I got to give this assessment, but it becomes a conversation tool focused on improving instruction. And not necessarily judging people. We're not pitting schools against schools, saying what practices are going well. Because if we can see that this particular instruction material is working really well across our system. We keep moving that forward. But in this data review, we also realized that our curriculum had some shortcomings. And so if the students are failing on the same standards, well, that can't just be a teacher issue. It across our system, we have a deficit. Where is this being taught? How's it being taught? Wait a minute. Our curriculum doesn't contain that explicit particular standard. And so it really has caused us to come back to the table and have a lot deeper conversation around our curriculum, what we're putting on the table as resources.
Love that, Dr. Jackson. And I find that many learning organizations, domestically and even internationally, because we have international viewers as well, I'd say the same thing. It's pretty much a problem of context with the drip, right? And we're not talking about the college drip, not the alpha drip, right?
Not the alpha drip.
But you're so right with that, because a lot of learning organizations, a lot of networks are data rich, but information poor. And that's where creating, I like to say, the shared capital around efficacy with the utilization of the data to make sure that we're asking these catalytic level questions, right? Where now, not only are we creating this alignment, as you did so nicely, strategically, building data literacy, right? Embedding that within the cultural trends of your district to build that data literacy. What I love the statement that you said was that we're moving beyond data compliance. And that's where we see a lot of practices, embedded practices within our learning organizations, where it's just more data compliance, i.e. I have to administer this formative assessment. I have to review this benchmark data. But what I loved with the practice that you implicitly articulated was that now that data literacy, that data alignment around shared mental models that were saying the same thing across the learning organization, where it became problem seeking to problem solving. Right? Because that's what data always does. When you start to really unpack the layers, move from that symptom level to get to that root cause level, you start now analyzing the data, synthesizing that information, where it becomes a problem-seeking endeavor to now problem solve, to be able to curtail the problems of practice within your learning organization. I always say this, Doc, data is much more richer than money to a learning
organization. Indeed.
And people, when I say that, I'm like, well, if you think about it, the information that you have that is embedded within the data is having a transparent conversation with us. We can find, like you said, practices that become outdated, where they can become obsolete practices, where now we're putting in more resources or repurposing resources back into our strategic priorities, i.e. literacy, chronic absenteeism, and behavior. But Doc, I want to talk about the AC stage of education and the rationale of why I always want to talk about the AC stage of education, because I'm trying to create the strategic urgency that we have two new set of students, Generation Alpha and Generation Beta, within the pre-K-12 continuum. And to support Generation Alpha and Generation Beta, we have to have strategic partnerships and alliances to truly advance this overarching theme of global readiness. These partnerships, right, alliances, they have to be rooted in innovation to shift away from the legacy paradigm. You know me, Doc, I'm this disruptor where we have to move away from the fossilized industrial model. But what approaches that you have used to lever strategic partnerships with community organizations, nonprofits, innovative stakeholders, higher education, or even other entities for impact to advance the organizational objectives around behavior, literacy, and chronic absenteeism?
So every leader, when they come into a new system, and I would encourage every leader annually, even if you're in the same system for several years, should do a real review of those partnerships. What are you doing? Why do you have those? And what is it benefiting? And as you look through that, I think there are three lenses from which you should look. One is it mission aligned? Does it align to our mission and our vision for where we're headed? Because oftentimes people always have a solution before they even have what the problem is. And so they want to sell you a solution. Well, let's talk about what my issues are first. So does this align to my mission? And then how do we make sure that this relationship is outcome-based and outcome-driven? And so that third lens is, how do we make sure we have mutual accountability, that we are mutually accountable to the outcomes that are on the table? Because you can spend a lot of, if not money, a lot of time with partners, and there be no benefit to that, that aligns to a mission or aligned to something that's outcome. One of the things, just as an ancillary note, that we are doing this year, and it's a innovation and certainly a disruptor, is outcome-based contracting. And so bringing in people to provide services like tutoring or things of that nature, and we're saying, 70% of this contract you're going to get. The other 30% is going to be based on your outcomes. And so what can you guarantee? So you get us the 10%, you get another 10%. So we have outcome-based contracting to ensure that it's mission-aligned, outcome-driven, and that we have mutual accountability in this work. So whether it's a community organization, higher education, or even if it's industry, we have to start with one question. What problem are we solving together that we as a system cannot solve alone? And there are some problems out there that, you know, are bigger than us. We need some additional partners. And then that becomes our jump off point to finding those partners, instead of what we oftentimes see in education is, I have this beautiful solution. Now help me come find the problem that's in your system that will make this solution fit. And then when you do those things, have a mission aligned, focused, outcome driven, and then mutual accountability, innovation happens. It happens within those partnerships, because those partnerships are embedded in instruction. They're embedded in student supports. They're embedded in real world learning. And they're not just something that's just laying on top of those things, but they're embedded in a part of that work. And so that accelerates everything. It accelerates the work that you're doing, and it does not create a distraction. Because sometimes you got to stop the real work to go do this partnership, whatever that partnership may be. I got to go do this photo op. I got to go do this particular compliance piece as a part of this grant, or as a part of this particular industry need that we have out here. But we embed it into the work that we're doing. And again, for a problem we're trying to solve, then go find that partnership and make sure that contractually, if not contractually, within a memorandum of understanding, here are our expectations to ensure that we have mutual accountability in this process. We're bringing this to the table and expecting, and then you're bringing what to the table and expecting. Then how can we ensure that at the end of the day, we're focused on the outcomes? How is this driving more students to be at school and to be at school on time? How is this driving better behavior in the classroom and teachers being able to get further along in the instruction? And how is this driving improved literacy? And we have, just in our short time, a year and a half here, we have some real tangible partnerships that have just been phenomenal. And I look forward to seeing the fruits of those. If I said them, people wouldn't understand it because they're local things. But we had a community organization that works with first through seventh graders called We Are Washington. They're pouring into character building. They're pouring into developing students within the team sports world and working as a team and collaborating. That directly impacts students, because, you know, if the students are engaged and they're active, they're more likely to show up to school. They're more likely to get engaged in school, and they're certainly more likely to graduate. Then we just launched what we call Bright Tracks for our Razorbacks. And what that is that really is Little Backs Bright Tracks, is what we called it. Little Backs Bright Tracks with the Razorbacks. And well, that is us partnering with the local hospital and our United Way. Every newborn is getting a QR code to connect with us. So those parents, we're saying, sign up. And when you sign up, we're going to ship you off a nice little box that has a onesie for the baby, that has our logo on it. It has a nice little blanket that's warm and fuzzy for the baby. But more importantly, and the real connecting piece we want to have, is that that child from age 0 to age 5 will get a book every month. And that's the partnership we have with the Texarkana Greater United Way, as well as the Dolly Parton Imagination Library. And so those are kind of partnerships we're saying, how's it impact us? Well, now I got students reading early, getting involved in literacy. Their first teachers are their parents. So how do we ensure that they have the success or the tools they need to be successful on that? So you go on and on, but when you start talking about those partnerships, how are they meaningful? How are they mission-driven? How are they outcome-based and outcome-driven? And then certainly, how do we have this mutual accountability in that process?
Yeah. To my audience, Dr. Jackson, we use this, and I say this pretty much every single episode, we use this as an asynchronous professional learning tool for leaders, for teachers, for ed tech companies, startups, organizations. And this is a professional learning tool that's self-directed learning. And to my audience who are edtech organization leaders, CEOs, startup founders, organizations, please rewind this answer back, right? Because Dr. Jackson essentially contextualized how organizations, how edtech companies should form partnerships with learning organizations, superintendents, and boards of education. Dr. Jackson, you essentially kind of basically took every single sentiment and statement I said at EdTech Week to EdTech founders and CEOs and companies, because I stated this in at EdTech Week, is that if a company does not know my kids or do not understand my kids or understand the priorities, then there's no, the partnership is not even going to form. Before you even come in, you need to have a baseline understanding of what the core problems or the core conundrums that we're facing as a learning organization, and to be aligned, i.e. going back to your first focus, which is being mission aligned, so that now the solution can accelerate the outcomes, accelerate the partnership, where now we're closing specific gaps, where we're accelerating literacy, where we're looking at chronic absenteeism intentionally. I really love this innovation, and I hope all of our superintendents across the country move to more of outcome-based contracts, right? Because it goes back to your third principle that you highlighted, which is around this, I like to say, reciprocal accountability between partner and learning organization. Well stated, Dr. Jackson, because again, the essential questions, again, back to my audience, to the EdTech founders, companies, organizational leaders, CEOs, this is exactly what learning organization leaders, superintendents, CEOs are looking for. If your product or solution is mission aligned, the outcomes, right? Ensuring that's outcome-based and outcome-driven, but more importantly, as Dr. Jackson stated, that mutual accountability. There's a Dr. Jackson, there's a lot of new solutions that are out there. And seeking partnerships, right? Seeking partnerships with learning organizations. But again, the intentionality to see if there's a direct alignment and how you can actually close specific gaps or problems of practice within a learning organization is so essential. So thank you for that answer, Dr. Jackson, because again, my audience can be able to take that and be able to now start looking at what are those critical issues that we're trying to address within the learning organization. So Dr. Jackson, I'm going to talk about artificial intelligence, because AI is becoming, I always like to say, is becoming ubiquitous within education, simply for the fact of the impact that technology have within Generation Alpha, Generation Beta, in their naturalized economic demand or economics. But AI is transforming every single sector, Doc. Now, within my 22nd century model, I always want to bring this up, right? I always state that we have to have this systems level shift to now creating learning environments that are rooted in what I call learning ecosystems that are AI centric. So now, from your lens as a superintendent, Doc, what do you believe is the vision of AI and education for these next two generations, Generation Alpha, Generation Beta, to be AC 2035 ready? And the rationale, I say this, Doc, and Doc, that means both you and I, we're getting old. Our kindergartners right now, they're anticipated. Now, listen to this, Doc. You're gonna laugh. They're anticipated to retire from the workforce in 2080. 2080, our babies right now, our K babies. 2080 is when they're going to be like, I'm retiring.
I'm done.
So, right. That's a long time, Doc.
That's a long time.
But here's the thing. We have to create learning environments that are preparing them for this retirement age or this retirement year of 2080. So how are you approaching this, right? How are you now approaching disruptive technologies and AI to become the utility within your learning organization?
Yeah, and I'm the lead learner in all of that. My mantra in this is that AI and education has to be viewed as a force multiplier and not a replacement. And so it's allowing for Generation Alpha and Beta to have personalized learning. So how do we facilitate that? It's going to reduce, and it's certainly already, I think if you use it now, reduce the administrative burden. There are some things that I used to have to do, I don't have to do anymore. I leverage artificial intelligence to help me draft that soft email because I'm a math guy. And so I'm one of those, you need to sit down, you need to stop and don't do it again. And I ask AI, now make it sound professional and cute because I don't want to offend anybody. And so it reduces some of that administrative burden. It expands our access to high quality instruction if we use it well. I've been using Notebook LM, and in Google Notebook LM, I'm able to create we're doing a book study as a leadership team. So I'm creating podcasts that I'm not having to sit there and do myself. I let AI generate those. And so now I have this personalized learning. You can go in there, you can fast forward, you can pause it, you can double the speed if you need to. And then if you don't like listening to it, I put a video together, all in the same vein. And so how do you leverage those to have high quality instruction even with our classrooms? And I think if we use it well, it can strengthen and certainly not replace human relationships. Because I'm not having to spend as much time doing those administrative tasks. So I can spend a little more time building that trust, building those relationships. But I can also, again, if you leverage it well, you can use it in order to find out the best gift for my wife or think through what are some potential, one thing we did was pretty interesting. Last Christmas break, we took a trip to Savannah. And it was really my introduction to how do I use AI differently. And so I leveraged AI and I said, I'm taking a trip from Texarkana. We did a road trip to Savannah, Georgia. Map it out. We're going to spend the night, at least one night along this journey. Show me where I'm needing to stop to do gas because I got this type of car. It gets this many miles to the gallon, and I want to stop at a Love's along the way if I can. And so it mapped out our entire trip. Share with me where we should stay. Here's some good recommendations because there are some great restaurants next to it. Here's some places to stop. You can do lunch here, breakfast here, dinner here. When you get to Savannah, here's your itinerary. And I'm thinking it would have taken me weeks to figure out the best trip. And to show that to my wife, she said, because she's the planner in our family, she's the one who thinks through all the things. And she said later on after that, she said, you know what? You giving me that particular plan and we refining it together showed me that you really were invested in this, that you really were thinking about how to make this trip special. And that spoke to me. I'm thinking that's building relationships again, interactions and using AI to do that. And so as we look at this strategic approach to the work around AI, and you look at it from the lens of instructional priorities, now, how do we use this tool to support literacy with adaptive tools? You know, a teacher can only do so many things, but how can I leverage the use of AI to adapt a text or to either increase rigor or bring it to that student's level and give them the scaffolds they need in order to get to the right level of that particular text? And then from the second and third worlds of where we are when it comes to attendance and behavior, I'm using, and I learned this even at NAPSE, went to an attendance workshop, and she was using AI to analyze the attendance worksheet for her campus. And they were able to, once a student dropped below a certain level of absenteeism, so you had 90% and you start getting dropping down to 80%, it triggered some automatic functions to send a text message to the principal saying, check on these students, that was able to send an email to the teacher, make a phone call home. And if it got to a next level, it could be talking to interventionists saying, these students need to be on your radar to go check in on without having to go and look at the spreadsheet every week. You update the spreadsheet, and then those triggers happen using AI. Same kind of conversation can happen with the behavior and looking at those trends. And then we oftentimes want to give feedback. Let's just say lesson planning, or you go into a classroom, you got a lot of notes around what you're seeing in the classroom, and the synthesizing of those notes really become the big lift or the heavy lift of it. How do you leverage AI? You put that in there and say, what are the two things I want to focus in on here? I need two glows and a grow, because you have to have that sandwich approach to it. And so how do you help you brainstorm through those kind of things? And so as you look at this AI approach, you have to be intentional. But I think the other thing we have to be is ethical as we do this work. It has to be student-centered. And we got to remind people that AI is not a strategy. They're just learning outcomes. There's opportunities to have some outcomes through AI and using it as a tool.
Yeah, I love how you state it as a tool. Dr. Jackson, I always say this, right? That the superintendent, the CEO, executive director, whoever it might be, is the lead learner of that organization. It's the lead learner of that organization. And I think that during this time or this paradigm where artificial intelligence, disruptive technologies are becoming ubiquitous within our naturalized world and our educational world, is that you have to be the lead learner to exemplify. I always like to say experimentation, iterations around strategic adaptations, and this force multiplier, as you talked about. What I love about this, right, that the tool, right, the tool is AI. You get this macro level perspective of what I always state is Moore's Law, right? That we have to have that equilibrium between humans and machines. Educational context is between our educational stakeholders and disruptive technologies and AI. Doc, it's phenomenal. Generative artificial intelligence, right? Large language models, generative AI reducing workload, providing explicit feedback, because the precision that AI can get to a student's zone proximal development, the precision in the context of differentiation, if we want to bring in Dr. Thomason's work around content process and product, scaffolding rigor so students are able to master specific segments to reach that standardized or the standard objectives. I just think that now, just being intentional, where we can actually define quality and efficacy of instruction pedagogy when we align it intentionally with our practitioners and the utilization in our classrooms. I love how you stated it, right? It is a tool to strengthen the obtaining various degrees or reaching various degrees of the knowledge taxonomies, and moreover, getting to that personalized level, i.e., addressing students' modalities. I see a lot of learning organizations and leaders, Doc, not taking that strategic initiative where now it's like, oh, AI is not adopted in our district, and or AI is not allowed in our classrooms. And I'm like, okay, well, we have to think about alignment in the context of preparation, whether it be readiness or preparation for Generation Alpha, Generation Beta 4, when they graduate high school, Doc, 2038, when they graduate, or when they decide to say, hey, I'm done, I retire, 2080. 2080. Man, oh man, when I saw that, I was like, our kindergarten is doing 2080. Where am I gonna be at? But Dr. Jackson, last question. And good brother, I'm gonna limit you to three words with this, but take it how it is. Please expand on it when necessary. What three words do you want our audience to leave today's podcast with regards to Generation Alpha, Generation Beta, global readiness for 2035?
Yeah. So, and you've heard these words a few times, even throughout our conversation, I think. And my first word is intentional. We have to be intentional with it. Adaptive. We have to adapt. Either we're going to adapt or we're going to be adapted, right? And then we have to be human-centered. At the center of this, I know we get so afraid of technology and what it might do or what it might replace. But at the end of the day, these aren't brains. They're doing what we ask them to do, and it's certainly human centered, and the work around it is human centered. And these three words, as we look at them, will determine whether education evolves or if it gets left behind. Got to be intentional, adaptive, and human centered.
Intentional, adaptive, and human-centric. Thank you, Dr. Jackson, for coming on VFE. If any of my audience members want to get in contact with you, expand on various strategies, organizational priorities, how you're leveraging your scorecard and alignment with strategic measurement to KPIs, how would they be able to get in contact with you?
So I am on every social media platform, and most of those I'm with the same handle of Jackson EDD. And so that's LinkedIn, that's Facebook, that's Twitter X, that's Instagram. You fill it in, I'm there. But also it's simply my first name, last name at TASD7.net is my email address. Happy to connect with whomever.
Dr. Jackson, again, I adore your leadership. I adore you not only just as a fraternity brother, I adore you as a leader just because of the impact that you bring and then the influence that is underscored within your leadership signature. Thank you for everything that you do for your students, your community, and also the leaders that you mentor across the country in impacting their individual leadership signature.
Well, thank you, Mike. Complete pleasure.
Absolutely. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.